And welcome back, everybody, to another episode of Benched with Bubba, episode 701. We're going to talk some more prospects here, get you ready for the 2025 fantasy baseball season, for your draft champion season, for all the crazy drafting we got going on. I got a crazy drafter with us, actually. He's been going, having a good time so far this year, but doing a lot of great content as well over at pitcherlist.com. He's got a Substack we'll talk about and so much more, but he's keeps rising year by year in the prospect discussions, and that's how I noticed him about a year or so ago. Got the notice to meet him a few times in Arizona, which is always a blast, and now I get to have him on the show, which I'm really looking forward to. You can find him on Twitter at m_ski22. Martin Sikolski, how are we doing, my friend?
Good, Bubba. How are you?
Doing well. Glad to have you on the show. It's fun. You know, instead of just talking in person in Arizona, you know, if any man's willing to wear a tuxedo t-shirt to a live show, he's a fan of, is a friend of mine. So we're doing good. So thanks for joining me.
Yeah, not a problem. Excited to be here.
Go ahead and let everybody know again. I told them where they could find you, but what kind of work you got going on, what maybe they can expect or have put out recently to go check you out, to get to know Martin a little better.
Yeah, I'm kind of all over the place. I actually just joined a new Discord group the other day, and someone goes, man, this guy's everywhere. So writing for Pitcher List on the Dynasty team over there. I'm also working on the Dynasty team over at Fantrax as well. I do have a Substack, like Bubba mentioned. We'll drop the link to that as this goes on. But yeah, just a little bit of everything, primarily in the prospect realm, but I'm really, really digging this redraft talk as well. So also a plug for Bubba and Ryan and their Discord and their Patreon. If you haven't joined the Bubba and the Bloom Patreon or Discord yet, you're missing out on big stuff. There's a lot of good stuff over there and a lot of really smart people in that room. So feel free to join. It's a great time.
I appreciate the plug there. It's always appreciated. But yeah, it's fun over there. You are definitely a big piece of that. You were in our Gladiator the other night, which was an absolute blast. You stayed up till the crack of dawn just in time to feed your baby. So we appreciate that. But that was fun. All right, let's talk some AFL because, like I mentioned, I've met Martin a few times out there, but he's also doing prospect stuff, so he's paying attention to it, not just coming out for a weekend to have a good time. He knows what's going on as well, and you know, prospect dummies like myself, we appreciate people like this. So Martin wrote a really great article over on Pitcher List about AFL hitter recaps because, you know, you see there's a couple big names people are talking about. We'll talk about them on here, of course, but not everybody knows kind of these underlying ones that, you know, might have an impact sooner than later on the league. Because the fun part about the AFL, I want you to talk about it more, is it's not just like AAA players coming up. It's a, you know, whole smorgasbord of fun through the deal. So when you were looking into writing this article for Pitcher List, kind of what were you looking at? Like, were you going team by team? Were you going like certain criterias? What were your like goals in writing this article, I guess?
Yeah, so ultimately I ended up going team by team for the preview, but the AFL landscape took a little bit of a different turn this year. So historically, you've heard it referred to as a finishing school for proximity prospects, and also hosts a lot of players that are in the 23 to 25 range, the olds, as Bubba would call them, that are on the verge of either being Rule 5 eligibles or they're just kind of at that career crossroads. And so that gives them a chance to showcase their skills as well. This year, the landscape really turned because some FYPD guys were out there, like Jack Caglione, Nick Kurtz. Kurtz was a late arrival, but nonetheless. Then there was a lot of high-end teenage talent. Leo DeVries was out there, Ethan Salas, Colt Emerson, and Juan Baez. So a lot of different names, but a lot of really high risers, guys like Zaire Hope, who we will not get into, but just a lot of really exciting prospect talent. A lot of guys that had missed a significant amount of time this year due to injury were just trying to get reps in. And there were some major league guys out there too, Matt McClain, Christian Encarnacion Strand, and even Nico Cavadas. So a really exciting blend of talent out there. Definitely hitter friendly.
Yeah, it was very interesting. Like you said, the I remember when I first, I think I've gone now 4 years to Arizona for the fall league, first pitch. And everyone used to talk about, oh yeah, it was all these guys that are like, they're going to be the top prospects next year. That's how it used to always be. Like they talk about, you know, the Vlads, the Acuñas, the Harpers, like all these guys. Ever since I've gone, it feels like it's just like you get a couple of the big guys, but it's more like you said, it's not a finishing school anymore. You get like this year, you mentioned the not even 20 year olds coming up from San Diego. That was wild. But then you also got something we saw a little bit of last year, but more so this year. Like you mentioned, the McLeans, the CESs that are like they were injured all year. Let's get them some reps. We'll talk about Andrew Painter. Same thing. Connor Phillips, another one you got down here. But like there was some of the quote unquote top pitchers were actually guys we saw or were expected to see in the past that kind of came back, and then a bunch of guys coming from like Caleb Durbin coming for what, the second or third time. So it's not just like a one hit wonder. Like most of the time you come once, that's it. No, it's like there's multiple trips to the dance on this one. So it's definitely turned into a different setup. Like you're saying, I think it's more, I don't know, again, I'm not a prospect guy. It feels like it's more for get as many reps for these guys as possible to get them ready to kind of evaluate them further because they're not sure of what they're seeing yet type thing. I don't know. Could be totally wrong. Just this is the novice outside looking in. Let's talk some of these players here, and we'll kick it off with Matt McLean. This was one when it was announced, we were all just like, whoa, but then it made sense. Dude missed most of the season. Let's get him ready for 2025. Like, I think we all expect Matt McLean to start with the team, but there were some things that changed at the fall league. So what do you got on Matt McLean?
Yeah, so before we dive too much into these players, let's preface this by saying that we don't want to take too much stock into impressive performances necessarily. But we can take stock in guys who struggled. McLean's kind of the exception to the last part of that. So he was fine out in the AFL. He hit .240, hit four home runs, did steal a base. He had a 42% strikeout rate, but let's give him a pass on that. So he didn't play all of last year. He had the shoulder surgery early in the year and then had some injuries that kind of crept up as he was getting ready to return. So the big thing for McLean is that he was healthy. The power looked good. He looked good in the field. He played 13 games, primarily second base shortstop. Ironically, got to play with his brother, who's a prospect as well, which is kind of cool. But the big thing was that McLean came out healthy, and he really displayed some of the power that we had expected. There's always going to be the concerns with contact rates and putting the bat on the ball with him. But ultimately, the power is the big thing we're looking for from McLean. And I think that he just came out. He showed he was healthy. He had some pretty impressive exit velocities. And that's a big thing for him. And now the pressure's on with Jonathan Indy being traded now. McLean's the go-to guy at second base. He's got to stay healthy and he's got to produce. So it was good to see him out there. It's good to see him healthy again and on the field. And for a prospect guy like myself, to be able to see a former top prospect in the flesh in kind of a weird setting was nice to see as well. So
it was good to see because sometimes like these, I can't remember who it was a year or two ago, they showed up to get reps in like 2 weeks and they bounced because they got there. Kind of like CES actually, but a couple games it was out. But this guy, like you could tell he didn't want to be there. He's basically felt like he was being punished, where it looked like McLean from what everything I saw. I was like, he's accepting the role. I need to get better. I need to get healthy. Like he ran with it instead of some of these guys like, hey, I've had the cups of coffee. I've been in the big league clubhouses. I don't need to come to air. Like there was a different feel it felt like with McLean. He was actually out there going, okay, I need to prove myself. It's been a rough go. So that was good to see.
Yeah, and McLean didn't have a ton of experience in the big leagues, if you really think about it. He only had like around 350 at-bats in his rookie year in 2023. So to get those reps is really helpful, especially at that key point in his development. He was just getting ramped up into being a big leaguer and then had to take a full year off. So coming back, it's going to be an adjustment period for him, and it's just good to see him healthy.
100% with you on that one. Let's talk about another player here that was take two in the Arizona Fall League for Colson Montgomery, because I remember he was hyped up in 2023 when I was down there, and he played well. I think he was one of the top hitters in the league by the time things were all said and done. Came back again in 2024 for some reasons that you will probably mention here shortly. But what are we thinking on Colson Montgomery after take two? Because I think some people after 2023 were like, by midseason, he might be the shortstop of the White Sox. That did not happen. And now we're kind of hoping again. If we're doing draft and holds, let's take a chance on Colson Montgomery. So what are your thoughts on what we saw in the AFL?
Yeah, it's kind of ironic. There was quite a few players that made multiple appearances this year in the AFL, which isn't normally a thing either, but Montgomery was one of them. He played well in 2023 out there. super athletic kid with good defensive skills and really had shown improved bat in the end of 2023 and in the fall league. But he had a miserable year this year in the minors. He had .214. He had a 33% strikeout rate, which is just awful. So they gave him another shot to kind of get things right. Because I really do think the narrative on Montgomery is the same entering 2025 as it was last year. He should be the opening day shortstop or up very quickly for that lowly White Sox team. Apologies to Mike Carter. But he was good. He had 313, 511, 656 slash, three home runs, four steals. And the biggest thing was he only struck out six times. Now, granted, he wasn't out there very long. It was kind of like a two-week thing, and he got in and got out. But for a kid like Montgomery that's still young, still needs to build up the confidence, I think the White Sox did him a huge favor by giving him another shout-out in the AFL. And even though he didn't stay very long, he was productive while he was there, and he probably got a nice confidence boost going into 2025.
Are we hopeful that he's the starting shortstop for the White Sox, or is it more like we have to wait and see AAA again? What are your we're all guessing, but what are your thoughts?
Yeah, so I think ultimately he's gonna have a shot at it for sure. I don't see someone standing his way like Lenin Sosa or somebody like that. I mean, when he's ready, he's ready. But ultimately, it's going to come down to Montgomery hitting. He's been fairly inconsistent. Like I said, hyper-athletic kid, really good defender, but the bat's going to have to play. And he really needed this big confidence boost ahead of next year. And hopefully he can build on that and take the reins and become the prospect everybody wanted him to be.
Yep, love to hear it. All right, let's go to St. Louis here. One that surprised me as well, because he had a pretty significant role. It was only 18 games with the Cardinals, but it felt like, you know, it wasn't great, but he showed enough between AAA and his little stint with the bigs to be like, okay, he's ready for 2025. But Thomas Sojace got a little trip to the AFL as well for the Cardinals. And I know he's like a shortstop, second baseman, so there's kind of that moving back and forth. Maybe they wanted to get him reps somewhere. I'm not exactly sure about that. I've talked to some guys that think he's going to be the future second baseman for the Cardinals. I've heard a bunch of different things. So what's your thoughts on what we saw from Sojace, and what do you think we can expect in 2025?
Yeah, so Sojace was kind of a surprise for me to be on the list as well. He's been super productive in the minors. He had back-to-back 20 homer seasons in 23 and 24. He really looked good in general, but I was really impressed with him defensively. He played second base. He made a lot of really nice plays at second base. And ultimately, I think that's going to be his landing spot. I mean, currently, Nolan Arenado is the third baseman there with Mason Winn at shortstop. Winn is not going anywhere. He's their shortstop of the future. There's no question about that. Whether they trade Arenado, it is what it is. But I don't think Sojace is going to play third base. I think he's their second baseman. Hit 391 with two homers and seven doubles out in the fall. He had more walks than strikeouts, which is always encouraging. Like I said, he played really well defensively. He's one of those guys that's in that limbo period, right? So I think he's 24, maybe 25, but he's at the point where it's that career crossroads. Is he going to be a big leaguer? Is he going to be a career minor leaguer? But I think he's got the talent to be an everyday regular. And I think he could supplant Nolan Gorman at second base for the Cardinals. They have similar concerns with their profiles. They're both high strikeout guys, high chase rate guys. But Sojace has better overall bat-to-ball skills. He makes more contact. And I think that given full run, or given at least a shot in spring training, I think he could be the opening day second baseman for the Cardinals. He didn't perform great in the 18 games that you mentioned in the majors, but his profile is one of offensive production, every level he's played at. And again, he played really well defensively, which is a big key as well. So
it's a big key for the Cardinals. That's kind of one of their go-to things. That's why they're moving and shaking all kinds of things in that team right now. But I actually took him recently in a draft, and he's going like, I think past like pick 600. I have to double check on that one, and I can in a minute, but I'm kind of interested in taking a flyer on him as a potential starting second baseman if you're looking for some depth pieces in those drafts, because I think they're, like you said, he's young. He could be like, you know, him and Wynn could be the future up the middle tandem there in St. Louis. Yeah. Speaking of another up the middle, or I believe he's a middle infielder. I better, you know, check my, you know, he's a first baseman, even better.
He's a corner guy.
Yeah, even better. He was not originally in the fall league to start. Then he got shipped down there, and the prospect Twitter world went abuzz because, like, oh, yes, Nick Kurtz is going to be there, especially prospect Twitter that was going to be in the AFL. Got really excited about that. So what's your thoughts on what we saw from Nick Kurtz? Because originally not there, showed up. I noticed a couple home run videos popping around. And if you think of Oakland, there's not a lot stopping people at first base right now. Soderstrom's there, but that's a whole other discussion. So what do you got on Nick Kurtz?
Yeah, so Kurtz was a really, really nice surprise. I saw that Chris Walsh had put out that he was going to come, and it's really exciting. And it ultimately he replaced Henry Bolte, who's one of the A's top prospects as well. But Kurtz is a number four. He was the number four overall pick this year in the draft. And he played 13 games out there. He had 353 and a 450 OBP, which is kind of his calling card, is getting on base. You mentioned a couple of home runs that he had hit. He had five extra base hits as well. I think at one point, the day we got out there, or the day I got out there on Halloween, he was a triple short of the cycle in like the second inning of a game. That tells you the offensive climate that is going on in Mesa. But he's going to be a star. He's going to be a really solid producer as a corner infielder. And honestly, he could be up this year. His reputation that he built in college is one surrounding the high on base percentage. He's got a very advanced approach at the plate. He doesn't chase much, draws a ton of walks. In addition, he's a big power hitter. He had a 93 mile an hour average exit velocity with 109 mile per hour, 90th exit velocity, which is pretty impressive for a kid that's just coming up out of the college ranks. And what I saw from Kurtz is he's super athletic. He's way more athletic than I anticipated. I'm not saying that he's, you know, Ken Griffey Jr. or an elite athlete like that, but he definitely moved better than I anticipated he would. He looks leaner and stronger than I thought he would be. And he really looks the part of a future first baseman in the big league. So I'm really excited to see what Kurtz does. I don't think it'll be long before he's pushing to be on the major league roster, but you never know. So.
No, I like that. You know, probably start the year in Vegas. I'm pretty sure they're still in Vegas. So wait, did their AAA team stay in Vegas with the team moving to Vegas? They had to have, right?
I don't know.
The A's
went drawn a blank. Yeah.
No, and then they'd share a stadium. I'm just thinking if he's got the power profile we're all talking about, he's going to absolutely love Vegas for at least, you know, half a season to a year before the A's give him at least a call. Because, like, I think Soderstrom's interesting, but I think we've seen enough of him almost, unless he changes a lot this offseason to kind of, you know, get our hopes up again. Maybe I'm wrong. He's still young. Obviously, things can change, but the A's are not the A's also play playing time, so who knows what they're going to do. But it would be an interesting chance to see him in Sacramento before it's all said and done.
Yeah, I think they'll manipulate his service time. I don't think he'll be up to get in for that. They're going to want to save the PPI pick for 2026, but yeah. he's going to be an impact player in your fantasy teams. And if you're in a dynasty league, and you're in the FYPD drafts that are going to be coming up, he's definitely a top five pick, and you got to get your hands on him if you can.
Top five pick, I love it. And there's some FYPD first year player draft rankings over at a Substack we'll talk about later. But let's talk about a guy that's close to my heart because he plays the best position in fantasy baseball, Moises Ballesteros. I believe I got it right this time, Ballesteros. I've looked into him because I wrote about him recently because some gentleman on the other side of the screen gave me a list of prospects to look at. And so it actually opened my eyes to how many really good catchers are close to the bigs. Like it's crazy right now that there's quite a few. Within the next, I'll say 2 years, we'll have a bunch of them up in the bigs. And Ballesteros is one of the few, at least in my mind, and you can obviously correct me, that has a clearer path than most to a potential playing time situation this season. So what did you see in the AFL, and what are your thoughts on Ballesteros for 2025?
Yeah, so first and foremost, I feel guilty a little bit because we talked about Ballesteros quite a bit when we were in Arizona. And then I think like last week, the Cubs signed Matt Theis to a one-year deal. Yeah, so we'll see how that all plays out. Theis is a nice backup player, but I don't think he's going to be a starter. Ballesteros is kind of Alejandro Kirkian build, so body and profile. He's a short, stocky guy. Yeah, we gotta respect the guys. Yeah. He's like 5'8". He's a little, as Rob D would call him, he's a meatball. 5'8", 195. But he's got that really nice offensive profile. He's got really nice plate discipline. He's got a ton of power. He's got significantly more power than Kirk. He's at least a 20 homer guy, even in Chicago. And ultimately, I think the reason he went out to Arizona was just to see if he could develop defensively. He's always been a bat-first catcher. His receiving skills aren't terrible, but if they want him to truly be a backup, then he's going to need to improve defensively. Otherwise, he's going to be a DH or potentially move to a corner. There's a lot of trade winds swirling in Chicago with Bellinger and Michael Bush, and who knows how that all will play out. But ultimately, I think Ballesteros is a guy that's going to get enough run in the big leagues this year to warrant a spot on a DC. He had 316 out in the fall league with five home runs, showed power to all fields. He's always produced high contact rates and solid batter ball profile. So he's a guy that I'm really big on. I think you've got him in the top 50 prospects for me. So I'm excited about Ballesteros, and I've been waiting for him for a long time. So,
yeah, I'm really curious to see what the Cubs do with him this year, because Miguel Amaya was supposed to be the dude, didn't really pan out. I'll give him some more run. He's young. It wasn't like 1 year wonder stuff, but the Theis thing's not ideal. But I think we've seen the Theis thing play out many times now. If Ballesteros is good enough, like, I think what'll have to happen is Amaya has to get hurt, and Ballesteros takes that spot. Ballesteros isn't coming up to backup. That's the way I kind of see it potentially going, but we'll see. Again, I think he'll get maybe 50 to 60 games by the time things are all said and done. It's just a matter of when and how those come to be. Yep. Xavier Isaac of the Tampa Bay Rays, a name that I've even heard about before, but didn't realize he was this young still. My goodness. 20 years old this past year in high A and double A. Got some nice accolades for his hitting. Or at least overall production at the fall league. So what do you got on Xavier Isaac, who, knowing the Rays, he's like 5 years away still, but what should we expect from him?
Yeah, I think that's actually a fair assessment, considering there's some profile holes that he's got going on. I really liked Isaac a lot. I still like him a lot as a 20-year-old. I've always been super high on him. I think I've had him as high as like a top 20 prospect, but I'm starting to cool on him a little bit. He did fine in the AFL. He hit .286 with 3 home runs. But we mentioned earlier about what you can take away from performances in the AFL. Kind of lean toward, you know, cooling or tempering your expectations on a guy who performs really well. But when a guy continues to show the weaknesses that he showed during the regular season, that becomes a problem. And that's where Isaac comes in at. So he had a 48.2% strikeout rate in the fall. And let me tell you, there were no good pitchers out there. Andrew Painter was it. Everybody else was 4 or 5 tiers below, if not more. And he also ran a 38 or almost a 39% strikeout rate during the summer as well. So strikeouts are a problem for him. With that said, the power is 100% legit. Definitely his carrying tool as he approaches the big leagues. But can you sustain that kind of production when you're not making enough contact? And that's where the question remains with Isaac. He is 20 years old. But he's going to be in that situation with the Rays where they're going to want a platoon. Right now, he can't hit lefties. They're going to want to maximize positional versatility. He plays first base. He could DH, but I saw him play right field. He moved well in right field because that's where he played all fall. But he wasn't natural out there by any means. So he's going to need to work on that defensive versatility as well. Ultimately, he's still 20, so we got to give him a pass. I do like him long-term. I think he's capable of making the corrections and the adjustments needed to become a big leaguer. But right now he's got some profile flaws that definitely need to be ironed out. And I think that we'll hear Isaac's name more middle of next year than we will for 2025. So,
gotcha. Cool.
And by next year, I mean 26, obviously.
Gotcha. Yeah, no, that makes sense. He's still young. Like, and again, the Rays, between the production and just the way they milk all that they can out of these guys, Junior Caminero says, what's up? Yeah, it's fun stuff. Let's go to Seattle here. Colt Emerson, another youngster on our hands here, a team that has been looking for some stable infield help, I say, because the outfield, they just keep rotating through good players. It's just a thing they do. The infield's kind of been in flux, it feels like, for a while in Seattle. So is Colt Emerson someone that you saw enough from in the AFL? Like, probably not this year, he's still so young, but a guy that we should be excited for in the future.
Yeah, absolutely. I didn't see enough of Emerson because I didn't get to see him live, which really hurt. He got injured early in the fall, so he didn't get to play a lot. But the kid's an absolute stud. He's only 19. He just got drafted last year in the first round of the draft in 23. He was really good in the AFL. He dominated. He had a 5 double game, I think the second game of the AFL. He ended up with 9 doubles, which led the AFL, even though he only played 13 games, hit .370. Another kid with really good plate discipline, doesn't chase much, very little swing and miss. He's going to run into more power. He's, like I said, he's still 19, still developing into his frame. He's a terrific runner as well. The biggest knock on Emerson right now is he hasn't stayed healthy yet. He didn't play a full season this year. He missed quite a bit of time. Then he goes out to the AFL, starts dominating out there, gets hurt again. So we don't want to label the kid fragile because it's way too early. He just had some fluky injury luck. But ultimately, Emerson's going to be a big time star for that team. He's their shortstop of the future. I have no doubt that he's going to succeed in the major leagues. I just don't think it's going to be this year. Even though had he stayed healthy last year, this could be one of those late season call-ups. And they still may do it. They still won't get aggressive, but ultimately I think Emerson is a guy that you should have on your radar. Obviously in dynasty leagues, you already know who he is, but in redraft, I think you should put him on your radar for 2026. He's going to be a stud.
Good to know. Yeah. Cause JP Crawford still is clogging the mess at shortstop. Yeah. And yeah. I don't know what they're gonna do at second base right now. So that's a whole nother situation, but yeah. Seattle's like the team that's always so close, but can never quite, you know, grasp the straw type thing. It's just never there. So we'll see what happens, but
It's really unfortunate too, because their starting pitching is like literally the best in baseball. They've got five horses at the top of that rotation and they can't get enough offense to win enough games. It's really frustrating.
They feel like the old Tampa Bay Buccaneers were like, they had that defense that said, just go score like 16 points a game and we're going to win every game. That's like their pitching staff. Just go score like 3 to 4 runs a game and we got this. Don't worry about it. And they just can't. As a Giants fan, I remember that from the early, you know, times. Ethan Salas, this is a name that I've been very pumped for, again, catcher, but super young, so I understand tempering expectations here on timing of joining the team, but like the talent to me, again, not a prospect guy, but from what I've read and seen, seems rather undeniable. I think to me it's like age and develop, I guess age and development can go hand in hand, are slowing him down. But when I look at the Padres roster this year, there is an opening at catcher for someone to take a chance on. I don't think it's going to happen, but I'm not saying it's not, you know, so you're saying there's a chance. What's your thoughts on Ethan Salas? Because I know I'm crazy. He's not coming up to start the year. But what did you see in the AFL? And what are your thoughts on Ethan Salas?
Yeah, he's not coming up to start the year, but don't rule out him making an appearance this year. Salas has been... he's one of the most polarizing players in the prospect realm. He signed at 16 years old. He defensively, he could play every day in the majors right now, but the bat is significantly behind. He ended up performing well and looking more comfortable at the end of the AFL. He finished with 228 average, four homers, six doubles and four steals. The strikeout rate was up a little bit, but I'm not going to take too much into this. Consider the fact that Salas, as a 17-year-old last year, ascended all the way up to double A, which is just insane. That's a high school junior where I'm from. So, and then for this year, he played all of this year at double A as well. He hasn't had a lot of success with the bat, but he's starting to look more comfortable. He's starting to kind of figure it out and piece it together. And there's such a large commitment to him. I think they gave him like $8.5 million to sign when he signed. He's not going anywhere. He may not be up to start the season like we talked about, but given their aggressive nature and how they've handled him, don't be surprised when you see Ethan Salas' name pop up on your fab runs late July, early August, because it's probably going to happen. He just has to get the bat to a serviceable level, and defensively, he's going to carry himself into the majors regardless if he can hit or not. So.
Yeah, I'm with you. I'm pretty optimistic on seeing him this year. Other people have said, nah, he's too young. And I'm like, Padres need some help behind the dish. So I'm just throwing it out there. Especially because it's another team, really good pitching. If you can play defense back there, they have enough offense on that team where they can kind of go the Austin Hedges behind the plate route and they'll be okay. So I could see them going that direction. Let's talk about a lifer in the AFL. He's had a few go rounds, but he's a speed demon that took over conversations this fall league. Caleb Durbin of the Yankees, you know, John Birdie didn't get brought back, so there's even an opening there if things play out. But there's a lot of chatter, fast, setting steals records in the AFL. What did you see? What should our optimism be like for Caleb Durbin?
It's really funny that you mentioned John Birdie, because Birdie is on my notes that Durbin reminds me of John Birdie. And Birdie actually went to BGSU, which is where I went to college at. So that's exciting as well. And it was actually a high school or college teammate of a buddy of mine. So big shout out to John Birdie for being a BGSU alum. Durbin was a megastar in the AFL. He probably would have won the MVP if it wasn't for Josue Briseño, who we'll talk about later. And ultimately he finished second in the MVP voting out here last year too. So he's one of those guys that's just, he's a grinder. He's a high energy, plays the game really hard, gives it his best effort every day. and he just plays with a chip on his shoulder. He's a little guy. He's like 5'8". There's not much to him physically, but he's going to get a lot of helium entering redraft season. And I know that's one of your bread and butter topics, Bubba's redraft season. And he's going to be on the list. He stole 29 bases out here in 24 games, which is a record that had been previously set when they played 50 games in the AFL, which is just insane. He's got carrying skills. He's a really good in zone contact hitter. He makes good contact overall. He's got obviously elite speed, but the harsh reality is he's really just going to be a utility infielder. I don't see him. He could carve out like 3 to 4 days a week in the Yankees lineup. He's got the skill set to do it, but his production level for fantasy purposes is going to be limited to speed and maybe some batting average. There's not a lot of power. His batted ball skills are pretty poor, but he's a fun guy to root for because, like I said, there's nothing to him. He's 5'8", super thin, but a fun guy to watch nonetheless, and really was the star of the AFL for the second year in a row. So I'm excited that Durbin did well, but I would temper expectations for redraft because there's not going to be – you're not looking at the next, you know, Troy Tulowitzki or some megastar shortstop that's coming up. He's just a guy, and you want dudes in fantasy. So.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it. Cause he does. It's fitting that he might take John Birdie's role. They seem to mimic each other pretty well in that one. Gift just one's got gray hair and one doesn't. it was interesting because, like you said, the way just kind of the awe that people had about him. Because I think I saw 3 games and 2 of them had Scottsdale in them. So I saw Durbin twice. And it was just like the second he came up, everyone was like, okay, get ready. And like he gets on, like, boom, boom, boom. And you're just like watching him fly around because they couldn't stop him. It was ridiculous.
Yeah, it was like Victor Scott last year.
Yeah, Victor Scott was the same last year. Very, very good point. And we saw how that turned out. So lesson learned. No, I was kidding. we'll see how that goes here. A side note, if we want to twist it into some redraft. Right now, because there's no third baseman in New York, Oswaldo Cabrera is penciled in there. If they don't sign someone, I'm taking Oswaldo late just for some potential innings because people are like, oh, Durbin's going to play third, and I'm with you on that.
Well, Jazz moved to third.
Oh, Jazz moved to third. You're correct. I was thinking second because they want Durbin in second. But they're saying Jazz could move back to second and put Oswaldo at third until they sign. So there's all kinds of moving parts there. Who freaking knows? We're drafting in November. It's so much fun. All right, you mentioned him. How do you pronounce the first name? Jose?
Jose. Josue.
I speak part Spanish, and I still didn't want to butcher that. Josue Briseño of the Tigers. He was the AFL MVP, I believe, if I remember correctly. And this is another, like, this is a trend, and this is how it should be in the AFL, but you'd actually think they'd be closer to 21 because they're in AAA. No, he was 19 because he got the high A-ball again. But a 19-year-old who really hasn't had a ton of experience in the minors just torched the AFL. So what are your thoughts on what we saw from Briseño?
Yeah, it was really strange too, because when the rosters came out, the Tigers had sent both of their top two catching prospects out to Arizona on the same roster, which generally you want your primary guy to go out there if you're going to send anyone. And then you're going to send a bunch of guys that play other positions. The key to that is Briseño actually moved to first base toward the end of the season, cause he's really inept defensively. And so ultimately I think we're going to see Briseño play first base. Monster AFL. He was the first Triple Crown winner to ever happen in the AFL, which is incredible. He hit .433, .509, .867 slash, 10 homers, 27 RBIs, and 90 at bats. And he just every day he did something different. It was a home run, it was doubles, just hit the ball all over the place to all fields. Big power, got on base a ton. But the wild thing was he hit 10 home runs in the AFL, and I think he played in 20 games. He only hit 2 in the regular season in 40 games. So that's where I'm talking about the not taking too much into performances out there. The air is really thin. The ball flies in Mesa at that time of year, including in my golf game, which was really bad. But anyway, so Briseño, he's going to be a nice player. He's really going to be an offensive guy first. Like I said, defensively, he's pretty inept. But he's already building a nice reputation in the minors of being a guy that's going to hit for power and hit for average. Obviously, he came out and just destroyed the AFL. but I think this is going to be a big building block for him. He's going to start pushing up prospect rankings. And with his ability to hit for power and average, moving to first base is going to be really big for him, because you don't want empty production there at first base. So I think Briseño is going to be a guy that he's going to trend upwards. He's going to have a lot of helium in the prospect realm. But I think realistically, we're looking at him as probably someone that's going to be impactful middle of 26, early 27, unless something drastically changes. But ultimately, he's going to be a good player, and I'm really excited about him.
So you're telling me he's going to take Torkelson's spot? No, I'm just kidding.
It's funny you said that. I'm writing up Torkelson right now as a prospect who needs to have a big bounce back year in 25.
So. Yeah, I think in the meatball, because first base disappeared so quick, learned that the hard way in that draft. Like, Torque, I think, is my starter right now. So, yeah, he needs a bounce back in a big way. I'm with you on that one, but I'm not, like, over the moon about it either. Yeah. All right, a couple more bats to talk about here. One of the top draft picks from this past year had an impact in his first go-around in the minors and had a really fun fall league is Jack Caglione. Me pronouncing names, me, Eno, shake hands. He's a stud, future of the Royals. We'll see where it all pans out, because I think we all like Vinny P and company still. But what do you got on Jack?
Yes, I mean, he's biggest star power that there was in the AFL. He's got that reputation of being a two-way player when he was at Florida. He did fine when he was in the AFL. He showed a little bit of everything we wanted to see. He obviously hit the power, played up well. He was able to hit the ball to all fields. He's getting better with his plate discipline. That's been a big looming dark cloud over his profile. But ultimately, he's going to hit the ball hard. He's going to hit it far. It's really just kind of, will he make enough contact to get to his power? His chase rates are astronomical. They've gotten better each of the last two seasons at Florida, and he's starting off to be okay in the minors, but ultimately he'll kill everything in the zone, but he wants to swing at everything too, which is going to be a problem. So I think that there's a lot of expectation that he's going to come up right away and be impactful right away. I don't think so. I think Caglione's going to have a slower path to the big leagues than we anticipate. I think that of the three first basemen that are highly thought of in the first-year player drafts, I think he's got the biggest flaws, and he's not safe by any means. And so I think that Caglione is going to be fine in the long run, but don't expect production from him this year at the major league level. Give him time to develop, let him improve what he needs to improve on, and then let him tap into that power and become a stud in the big leagues. So.
Good to know, because there was a lot of hype coming out on him. And I'm always, again, people that listen to me enough, I always say not a prospect guy, and I always temper my expectations on all these guys. I'm always scared to draft them. That's why I bring people on the show to try to talk me into it. And that's good to hear, because Jack is actually in my queue. We're in round 43. I have not picked him yet, but I haven't, like, starred to remind me, like, hey, maybe this is an option. Maybe I'll just de-star that one real quick.
I'd be surprised if he made an impact. Unless Vinny P gets hurt again, I just can't see them pushing him. There's no reason to push him.
I agree, and that's why, like, Vinny P is, to me, still the future of the Royals. They did a smart thing, which teams need to do, is have a backup plan, because Vinny has had a shoulder issue a couple times, and that could be a lingering problem. So I think that is a smart move, but we'll see how that plays out. Another returner this year to wrap up our hitters was Chase DeLauter of the Cleveland Guardians. Last year it was him and Manzardo taking the AFL by storm, and Manzardo did his thing, and DeLauter was pretty good, like, not bad, but did good. And some people got excited for a potential 2024 campaign, and they got hurt a few times and things got set back. So he returned to the fall league this year. What should we expect from, or what did you see that you maybe liked about Chase DeLauter or didn't like? And then what should we expect? Cause it feels like 2025 has got to be the year for him if it's going to happen at all.
Yeah, I'm going to go on a little mini right here about the Guardians and how they handled DeLauter. DeLauter has had foot injuries dating back to his time at James Madison. It's always the left foot. This year he had turf toe. He had broken toe. He's had multiple broken feet, that same left foot. I really don't know why they sent him to the AFL. He only had 47 at-bats. I don't think the risk is worth the reward, even though he missed time. I saw him live this year in Akron. He's a stud. When he gets going, when he's healthy, he's easily a top five prospect and easily a top 100 dynasty asset. But they're really pushing it, putting him out in the AFL for really no reason. He's got nothing left to prove in the minors. They're wasting, as pitchers, they say with pitchers, don't waste their bullets in the minors. Stop wasting Dilaudière's bullets in the minors. Let him come up. Let him be on their opening day roster. We know that the Guardians need offensive help. He's going to provide that. If you're going to put him on the field, put him where he's going to make the most impact. It's not in the minors. So get Chase Dilaudière up. The kid's a stud. That's my rant.
No, that's fair. I like to see it. And the Guardians have always been looking for outfielders, it feels like. Yes. So, like, really, why are we playing games? I agree. I think it'll be interesting, and he's a fun one to take a dart throw on. I mean, not even a dart throw. He should get a pretty good impact on draft day. Yep. All right, let's head to the mound for a couple, because I say a couple because, as you mentioned at the beginning, and it's been a trend in recent years, not a lot of big arms go to Arizona. That's just the brass tacks of the situation. Biggest arm this year came because he needed innings to get ready for 2025 potentially, and that is Andrew Painter. So what do you have on Painter? Because I know we know he's a stud, but what did you see and what do you kind of expect in 2025?
Yeah, so what I saw and what I expect in 2025 was kind of being on a different level, and I think people are going to be disappointed by that, but I'm just being realistic with your listeners. Painter's he's a stud. Everything looked good. His fastball was up in triple digits. He had a really nice feel for the slider, and the change in the curve both looked good as well. The command is going to come. He's still, coming off Tommy John. He hasn't pitched in the minors at all. It's just been in instructs and on the backfields and trying to get built back up. But he threw 15 and two thirds innings. He had 18 strikeouts, just his four walks. He's a guy. He's not a guy. He's a dude. And he's the number one pitching prospect in baseball. I just moved him back ahead of Job because I forgot how great he was because we haven't seen him since March of 22. But he's still super young. He's only 21 years old. With all that said, urge caution in redraft. Yeah. I don't see them rushing him. There's no point in rushing him. As great as he is, as much as it looked like he was going to be in their opening rotation before he got hurt, I don't see them rushing him. I see a similar trajectory to what Skeens had this year. He's going to make, a handful of starts in the minors, probably anywhere between, 5 to 12 starts in the minors. And then they're going to build him up until he's ready to pitch in the big leagues. He will be up, but I think he's going to be on a significant innings limit. I would be surprised if he exceeded 100 innings total for the year. It's going to be a lot of how we saw Skeens manage early on, which is going to be shorter starts with more days of rest in between. I love Painter. He's a stud. Feel free to take a flyer on him in your DCs, but in your 12 to 15 team standard leagues, your OCs, your main events, someone's going to inevitably take him just for the upside. But I just urge you to use caution because I don't think he's going to be as impactful in the fantasy world this year as everyone wants him to be.
No, that's very, very fair. Because the other thing that stands out to me besides just limiting his innings, which makes 1,000% sense. Mm-hmm. You look at a Phillies team that's, Wheeler, Sanchez, Nola, they're going nowhere. Like those three are unless they get hurt. Ranger Suarez has pretty much earned the right to stay in that rotation, barring something crazy. They're discussing taking Taiwan Walker out of there, even though they paid him money. But at the same time, they're rumored to be on the Crochet wagon, the Snell wagon. Like they're actively looking for a starting pitcher is my point. Yeah. Like, I don't know who they'll bring in. So in theory, they could have five not really move, almost immovable objects in Painter's way to start the year. Obviously we know how rotations change throughout a season, but the idea of him starting out the year in the rotation, the way they're talking about filling out the rotation, kind of checks out everything with what you just said. So
exactly why they're not going to push him. They're all what you said right there with the Crochet, the Snell, all that stuff just shows you that they don't want to push Painter. They're not going to do it. And ultimately, if they really want to dip it in the minor leagues, they've got Mick Abel, who he's a project. He's never turned into what people thought he was going to, but he's pitched a lot at AAA. And ultimately, they need to find out what they can get from him. He's never pitched in the big leagues before. And they're more likely to throw him out there in a spot start than they are going to rush Painter. So,
Yep. Nope. I like it. Like it a lot. A couple more here. You have Connor Phillips of Cincinnati. We saw Rhett Lauder kind of get his first go around last year with mixed feelings on that. Connor Phillips got a little bit of action as well, but then he went to the fall league. So what did you see from Phillips in Arizona, and what should we hope for in 2025?
Yeah, I was actually really impressed with Phillips. I saw him. The one time I saw him live out there was a game that he had five walks, but the home plate umpire was really bad and everybody was heckling her. I felt bad, but he looked really good. Ultimately, he had a 4.19 ERA, but he did have one blow up start early on where he allowed seven earned runs. So beyond that start, he had 17 innings with just two earned runs. The fastball was back up to 100, like around 100, sat in the upper 90s consistently. His slider had really nice depth and really nice bite to it. He made some really good hitters look really bad out there. And then the curveball kind of looked like it was rounding back into form, which is kind of what got him to the level he was at before he debuted in the big league. So ultimately, it's still going to come down to command like it does for a lot of guys. But when his stuff is on, Phillips has as good of an arsenal as anybody in that organization, and that includes the Nick Lodolos and the Hunter Greens. He's got great stuff, and he's definitely a late-round dart throw in DCs and could be a guy that gets significant run in their rotation this year.
Yeah, yeah. What run do we want in Cincinnati is the million-dollar question. But, right. Hey, as you know, in the deeper leagues, even in like a DC, you just take innings at a certain point and see where you can make it work. So that's very, very interesting. The last pitcher we have down here to discuss is one Sam. Oh, I'm going to have fun with this. Sammy Natera.
Yeah. Yeah.
Ballpark? Yeah. Okay. Of the Angels. And now we talk about the Phillies having a slew of guys kind of locked into rotation. The Angels are doing that in a weird way with Hendricks and Kikuchi signings. They still have Detmers, who, teaser alert, Steamer loves. and a few other guys, Jose Suarez, they kept for some reason. Jose Soriano. They have moving parts is what I'm going to say. We saw like four other guys from the minors come up last year, Kahanowicz and others. So what are we thinking with Natera? What are you seeing in Arizona with him?
I just thought he was really fun to watch. He's an older guy. He's 25. He's one of those guys that's kind of at a crossroads. He's had a lot of injury history, but he's one of those guys that really was a slow developer, kind of a late breakout. But he was nasty out there. He had a 0.75 ERA. Had 12 innings pitched with only 17 strikeouts and only four walks. And that comes on the heels of a 0.6 ERA this year at AA. We know that the Angels don't use AAA for any reason whatsoever. That's why guys like Zach Neto and Nolan Chanwell just completely bypass the level altogether. And he's not going to be a starter. He's going to be one of those bullpen leverage guys. But coming from the left side, 92 to 94 with a really nasty fading changeup is going to be fun. And ultimately with Ben Joyce, who's their pseudo closer, he's always hurt because he throws so hard. Someone's got to close games in LA. And Natera just has that pitchability and the stuff to get guys out. And I would take him as a 50th round pick in a DC just because I like him. He's got some potential. I think he's going to be on the opening day roster. They don't have a lot going on out in LA. So I think that Natera is going to get some run out there, and he's fun. So he's not going to be his ADP is going to be what, 700 is at the maximum for NFBC. Yeah,
I know.
But yeah, he's a guy that you could potentially take in the 50th round, especially as draft season moves on, because no one's going to contest you for his services. And he may just produce something for you, and you might be able to plug him in as one of those guys when everybody starts getting put on the IL. So.
Yeah, I just looked right now over ADP in the month of November. He hasn't even been drafted yet. So
do
what you need with that. But those are the kind of players I like taking darts on at the end, because we say this now. If we had the same conversation at DC's like in January, like things could change in a heartbeat. Again, pros and cons of early drafting. Yeah. All right, before we head out, that was fun. Anything else on the AFL you'd like to mention that maybe you saw, you liked? Anything else before we move on to a couple of little tidbits?
Yeah, I mean, we saw Christian Encarnacion Strand out there. That was good for him to get out there and get some reps as well. production level was fine, but again, seeing him and McClain both on the field, healthy, getting their reps in is encouraging. I think that that bodes well for the Reds this year. They've gotten, they had kind of a rough season last year, as we know, sorry, Jeff Erickson, but with these young kids going, getting McClain back, getting Encarnacion Strand back, hopefully Marte can kind of bounce back as well. That'll be encouraging for that team, building around Ellie. Aside from that, there wasn't a whole lot. There was nothing on the pitching front. I really expected to see a lot more out of Grant Taylor from the White Sox, but he struggled quite a bit. And there was just guys that didn't perform the way that we wanted to, like Zaire Hope. He was fine early on, but he just didn't perform well for the Dodgers. He's a helium prospect as well. So overall, the AFL was good. It was a lot of fun out there. We had a good time with the golf outing and all that stuff. And the prospects came to play, and everybody performed fairly well for the most part. So.
Yep, always a blast. The most disappointing part for me was about 3 or 4 days before leaving, Bryce Eldridge got taken home. Yeah. Was, like, I was so pumped for that. Mm-hmm. And now I got to wait to watch him probably at the big league level, because I don't think he'll be in the minors too long this season.
Nope.
At least he better not be as a Giants fan. Like Lamont Wade, really? Lamont Wade, that's what we're doing? Like, come on, Buster, figure it out. All right, enough of my ranting. It's too early for me to get pissy. Let's talk about a few other things you got going on. You mentioned you're writing over at PitcherList and Fantrax, but you also got your Substack going on. And as someone that's ventured off into his own world, did a Substack last year. Obviously, as you mentioned earlier, joined up with Ryan to do a Patreon this year. So Substack's on hold for now. Substack's a fun way to kind of get your work out there, make some money if people feel like helping you out. But it also lets you kind of just give your voice. You're not like, because as much as we like contributing other places, you're kind of still at the mercy of their formatting, if that makes sense. This allows you to just do you. And that's the fun to me, is why I love doing this stuff. And so you've recently put out some rankings, some players to look at late in drafts. I'll just let you highlight a few things if you want and tell people the address and all that good stuff and where they can find it.
Yeah, so the Substack address is kind of weird. So just follow the link off my Twitter, or I'm on Blue Sky as well. My Blue Sky is MSKI22. They wouldn't let me put my underscore in, which really disappointed me. but yeah, so I touch on a little bit of everything on my Substack. I'm always putting out prospect rankings. I do that pretty much once a month. I try to focus on guys that are kind of up-and-coming prospects, kind of, you know, the deep sleepers for guys that play in dynasty leagues. And then this fall, I really started to kind of push into the redraft world as well. I'm trying to find my niche in this industry, and it's challenging. When I first started writing less than 2 years ago, I talked to Chris Clegg, and he basically said, you're going to have to find your niche some way, somehow. But once you find that sweet spot, you just go with it. And so I'm still trying to find my sweet spot. And because of that, I've got the Substack going, and I can kind of cross both genres, right? So I'm doing all the dynasty and prospect stuff over at PitcherList, and then at Fantrax. And then on my Substack, I can kind of write about, you know, redraft and all the good stuff that I also do as well. So, but I told myself when I started writing that until I felt like that I was good enough to produce quality content at a high level on a regular basis, that I wasn't going to put myself behind a paywall. So I've maintained that status. I'm still not behind a paywall on my Substack, and I don't know that I will for the foreseeable future. So right now, I take advantage of being able to read some of my stuff. I don't double dip on my content. I don't put anything out for PitcherList or Fantrax that I'm putting out on my Substack. Everything's all original content. I try to write every day. But yeah, I appreciate all the people that have supported my work. Appreciate you and Ryan giving me a platform on your show, or not even on your show, just on Bench with Bubba, and then on the Patreon. I'm writing a lot. I'm writing more than I anticipated, and I really have a passion for it, and it's exciting to be able to share my love of baseball and share my opinions with other people. So,
well, it's great to see. We've enjoyed the addition of Martin Sokolsky to the fantasy world. And it's fun, and you are busting your rear end, which is kind of what we all go through out the gate, and some of us don't stop. So it's just the way of the world. It's a passion project for most. That's one thing people don't understand out the gate is we're not getting rich off this, everybody. This is just something we like to do, and in the end, you hope to make a few shekels to kind of justify it. But that's how it goes, and I'm with you. Like, I was anti-paywall forever, and that's why still a lot, like at least half, most of my stuff is always free. And then I put a few things behind now, which I never would have before type thing. So I get exactly all of your comments. I've been there, done that, understand everything you're saying right there. So keep doing what you're doing is all I can say, and people should go check it out because it is very good stuff. Martin is a very sharp and, individual, and it's fun to chat with. And like I get to know him more in the Patreon now because – you know, the beautiful thing about that world, again, this is a shameless promotion here, but one reason why Ryan and I wanted to get the Discord is there's so many smart people that play fantasy baseball that we don't have to be there all the time to talk to people. Like, there's days where we get to sit back and watch the group talk, and it's better than probably me and Ryan bring to the table. So it's a fun little world if you guys want to check that out. But Martin's a big piece of that, along with others. Michael Cicchini's in the chat there doing his thing. And it just keeps growing, let's put it that way. And that's the fun of it.
Yeah, it's been really nice to be on that Patreon and Discord that you guys started up. Rob DiPietro's in there. He's invaluable resource of all things redraft, all things NFBC. I saw Jenny Butler join the other day.
Yep, Ben Tidd's in there.
He's awesome. Ben Tidd's in there. It's awesome. I really want to meet Ben Tidd.
Seems like a nice guy. You and me both. Yeah. I record with him once a week, and I keep trying to get him to Arizona. We were really close this last year. Really close.
Yeah. I listen to him all the time. Yeah. It was really cool to see Toby on the show a couple weeks ago too. I'm a big Toby fan, so.
Yep, Toby's one of the all-time great human beings in this world. So I've been very fortunate to learn from that man. But before I just start gushing about everybody I've been very fortunate to meet in this world, we're gonna wrap it up there, my friend. And I'm gonna get you back on. I've already had a few ideas while we were chatting there to get you on for some redraft talk to get you your voice out there in that realm as well. But again, I know you just did it, but again, plug all your stuff, your Twitter, your Blue Skies, your everything you got going on before we head out of here.
Yeah. So Twitter is at M_SKI22. Blue Sky is at, well, I don't know if there's even an at on there, but it's MSKI22 with no underscore. I have a link to my Substack from both of those platforms as well. I'm writing a ton of Dynasty content for Pitcher List, working for Nick. And I also recently joined up with Fantrax. I'm writing quite a bit of stuff for them as well. So if you can't find me somewhere on the internet, I'm pretty surprised because all I'm doing is writing. And it's been an absolute joy and a blast. And I'm really thankful for the opportunity that Bubba gave me this afternoon. So
awesome, man. Yep. Looking forward to doing it again. You guys should all follow Martin. Very, very bright mind out there. I've got to watch him from afar for a bit and meet him recently the last couple of years, and it's been fun. So go check him out on all social media platforms. Check out his work. Support the Substack. That's how people keep on giving you good content. And until next time, this was Bench with Bubba, episode 701. Catch y'all later.